Welcome to WGWG.org. I'm Nikki Bliss Carroll, and I am joined in the studio this afternoon by Dr. Timothy Vanderberg and Dr. Joseph Moore. Dr. Vanderberg is professor of history here at Gardner-Webb with specializations in the New South, the American Civil War, and industrialization. And Dr. Moore serves as assistant professor of history, and he is the current chair of the department. And he specializes in early America, African American history, and the Atlantic world. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
We have asked you to come into the studio today because we were wanting to learn a little bit more about the Department of Social Sciences, but also with kind of a special attention to a recent scholarship that was established in honor of Dr. Gil Blackburn, Dr. Tony Eastman, and Dr. Barry Hambright. And it's being called the Blackburn Eastman Hambright Humanities Scholarship, or the BEH Scholarship for short. And I know that all three of these men have had a pretty substantial role in kind of where we're at foundationally with regard to the Department of Social Services here at Gardner-Webb. They served for decades and decades, many of those decades together, and really helped establish some things and a direction for the department that you guys are now carrying forth along with other colleagues in the department. And I'll start with you, Dr. Vanderberg. You actually were an undergraduate student here at Gardner-Webb while these three giants, I'll let you reference them as you told me earlier what you guys call them.
But the triumvirate.
The triumvirate.
Right.
They have really phenomenal, when you mention their names, people have glowing and wonderful things to say. The memories that people carry of the time that they were in the class under their tutelage was just, it's just really inspiring. And I know that they were very inspirational to you personally, right, and professionally. So would you mind just sharing a little bit about what your experience was like here and kind of how they helped shape where you are now?
Right. Well, I came here, I didn't know what I wanted to major in. I didn't know what I was going to do. For a while, I was a Spanish major, and I thought I was going to be an interpreter, but I really wasn't really into that much. And I kept taking history, political science courses on the side, and I thought I'm going to minor in this and major in Spanish. But over time, various things happened, and I ended up majoring in social sciences. My concentration actually was political science. I didn't have a mm-hmm. political science major back then. So Dr. Hambright was, the lone political scientist at this time in the social sciences department. So I ended up taking a lot of classes with him. And along the way, I actually had two classes with Dr. Eastman. I had Civil War and Reconstruction and American Diplomatic History. And I tell my students that I never made an A in his course. I took Dr. Eastman's course twice, made a B both times. And so when my students complain to me about, you know, having a hard time in my class, I say, look, I got a PhD in history. I made Bs in history as an undergraduate. It's not going to kill you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just he had very high standards, and I just at that time didn't meet them. And then I had Dr. Blackburn. Dr. Blackburn was a European historian who taught German history and modern Europe, and so I had him for two classes. So I ended up with a social science degree with a concentration in political science, and every one of my political science classes were taught by Dr. Hambright. Actually, there was one other guy who taught part-time, Dr. Withrow, but I think he had a heart attack during one class I had. The only one I didn't have, Dr. Hambright, and Dr. Hambright came and filled in. Mm. But these three men had a tremendous impact upon me. I ended up getting a social science major, and from here I left and went and taught at a private Christian school, history and political science, for a number of years, and then decided going to get a master's and PhD. And I switched from political science to history, but it's because of the foundation these three men had, the amount of time they poured into students' life. I saw the personal attention they gave students. They had open-door offices most of the time. They were willing to meet with students and have impact, and they showed a personal commitment or a personal interest in each student who they had, and they really molded people's lives, and they poured into me. As I told someone a while back, I said, I'm sitting in this office and, you know, I just rotate out as department chair, but I'm in this office in the social science department as department chair because of these three men, because of the impact they had upon me. They were strong scholars. They were men of integrity. They expected a lot of you, but they knew how to pull it out of you too.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had a big impact upon my life.
Absolutely. And that mentorship role, I think that they displayed, is something that we'll definitely come back to. But I know that's something that the department is really carrying forth, that piece of maybe what the foundation was that they had laid. Dr. Moore, you actually mentioned that you were hired once Dr. Tony Eastman retired. It left a hole in the department, and they needed an additional professor, and they hired you to come and serve alongside Dr. Vanderberg, and I'm not sure if there are other history professors.
We have four.
Okay, four total.
We only have three right now.
Oh, okay. So tell me a little bit about that experience. I know that you had shared that, there was an event that was being held at Hamrick Hall, and it kind of opened your eyes to some things here at Gardner-Webb.
Yeah, and I knew Gardner-Webb as a North Carolinian and as someone who had been in higher education in North Carolina by reputation, but I had never been here. I actually applied for the job when I was in Ireland working and saw it. And I thought, that'd be a great place to be. But again, it was all by reputation. So I came and interviewed and really loved it. And I was going to be replacing this guy that everyone kept telling me about was Tony Eastman, and that wasn't a name. That seemed to be like a legacy that was being replaced. And I very quickly picked up that would not be something that could be easily done.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found out I was getting the job and was coming down here, I heard about through Tim that there was going to be one last Tony Eastman lecture, and that the demand for this lecture was so high that they'd had to move it into Hamrick Hall, mm-hmm. which is at the time was our largest seating venue. And I decided to drive down and see this thing. Like, who is this legend that I'm supposed to be coming in behind? And I came into a standing room only performance auditorium where he gave one final lecture on American history, and then it was preceded by a voluminous standing ovation. Mm. And to see people who were of many generations who had driven from their homes from all across the region to be here for this, for in some cases someone they had taken when in the 1970s or 1980s, mm-hmm. They wanted that experience one last time, and the way it connected the generations of Gardner-Webb alums with the current students who were actually there for class and had an exam on this material the end of the week was very special to see. And it confirmed for me that the Gardner-Webb I had heard about, this amazing place that was connected to its Christian mission, that was connected to students that cared about each individual student in a way that you don't see as much these days in higher education, was authentic. Mm-hmm. And that these were people who had a lasting impact on the lives of students and the lives of young people who went off to live really tremendous lives because of that experience. So it was great to see, and it was also somewhat intimidating.
Right, which is a great, I think, a segue to the next stage of kind of what we want to talk about. But how do you take that, what's been done so well, and what is the approach? I know that the student-centered experience is something that is 100%, I think, across the board here at Gardner-Webb, something that we're proud of and excited to be able to proclaim. How do you make that a reality for students? And I'll start with you, Dr. Moore, and then we'll ask Dr. Vanderberg the same question.
Well, I think the three men here who have their names on this scholarship to honor their careers were historians and political scientists. We actually have several other disciplines as well, but in terms of focusing on the programs these men built, we have had a really remarkable run of success building on what they did, and we've seen that success lived out in the lives of students. So whether it's a young man who came here and went on to a top-ranked law school, whether it's I guess I can name names, right? I can brag on these people.
Cool.
Lindsay Frazier, who came here from Rutherford County and is now at Chapel Hill Law, which is one of the most competitive entrance experiences in the Southeast for law schools. Whether it's Stephanie McKellop, Stephanie went on to an Ivy League PhD in early American history. Whether it's Elizabeth Moore, who's doing Appalachian history, is a PhD at West Virginia. Whether it's Sarah Lynch, who's now in Britain in one of the top museum studies programs in the world, and is actually our second recent student to go there and work in museums and experience that from the British side. Or whether it's students who've gone on into finance and banking and all kinds mm-hmm. of other things that aren't, that don't seem like the natural go-to for history, but are actually great applications of critical thinking skills, investigative skills, and good people skills. And that's all really due to a foundation that was built and that now we get to build upon. And mm-hmm. these students are the continuing scaffolding of that process. Mm-hmm. Every generation just producing more and more great young graduates who get to go on and do interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And carry with them the professors and those who kind of poured into them along their way. Mm-hmm. You mentioned, Dr. Vanderburg, the way that Dr. Hambright really impacted you and poured into you and kind of made that personal connection with you. Will mm-hmm. you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, Dr. Hambright was an unusual person. He had a very bright mind and could remember a lot of things. He was a baseball scholar, for one thing. He knew baseball statistics. We found when we were cleaning out some of his stuff in one of the closets in the bottom of the chapel, when I first started teaching here, we were in the bottom of the chapel, huge amounts of baseball cards that I guess he was storing here too. But so he had his tremendous mind for trivia, baseball trivia. He had a tremendous mind for political trivia too. And he loved going around. When I came here as a faculty member, we would go to lunch together as a department, many of us, and he loved asking political trivia. And so that was great. But, you know, all these men, Dr. Hambright in particular, would take time with students, would talk with students, not just interested in what you did in the class, but interested in, you know, you as a person mm-hmm. And what you're interested in and making you a more well-rounded person. And I think that's something we carry over in our department because, you know, most of us have an open door policy for our offices, and students know they can just come in and see us and talk to us about issues they have. I had a lady this morning who has a health issue that I could relate to because I've had some health issues like her. And so for about 20 minutes after class this morning, she was just telling me about her health issues and what she was going through, and she has an undiagnosed condition. But it's good when students can feel like they can confide in you and some things like that mm-hmm. and know that, you know, they come to you, talk to you about, because I'm missing class for this reason, and then they feel comfortable enough to talk a little bit about what's going on with them, and they know that, you know, you care about them mm-hmm. and that you're willing to pray for them mm-hmm. And keep them in mind and follow up with them. And so we have an atmosphere, I think, at Garden Webb and in our department where this is your second home. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not away at a school where you're a number. And as I tell my students, I've been to two major universities and thankfully in the graduate program, but I taught as a teaching assistant in these programs and had huge numbers of students. And a lot of them, when you take a core course with a major professor at a large university, you've got TAs. You never meet the professor. They never know your name. Mm-hmm. The TAs manage everything for you. We don't do that here at Gardner Webb. In our department, you're going to get your core courses with professors who have terminal degrees by and large. And many of us have published and written. And so you're getting top-notch professors. And that's what I saw when I was here at Gardner Webb mm-hmm. with these guys.
Right.
These are guys who were top-notch, researchers top-notch in their field, and they're passing that on to you. And we get the opportunity to do the same thing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful cycle. One of the things that you said made me think about a story you both relayed to me about Dr. Yelton and some other staffers who really stood up for a student who was going to have to leave school because of funding, and mm-hmm. he just didn't have the finances to continue. I believe, I'll let you all just share that briefly.
Yeah, well, it was a wonderful experience. That was also early in my tenure here, and so gave me another good insight into how genuine we are. When we say we care about students, that's not a line. It occurs. Dr. Yelton, who at the time was the other historian, who's now associate provost, and I have both shared a student in various classes. He was a history major, very bright young man.
He was a veteran, wasn't he?
Yeah, mm-hmm. and all this to say, he just kind of stopped coming to class one day, and that didn't seem like him. It didn't make sense. And so we agreed to kind of reach out and see what was going on, and I finally got a hold of him and said, well, just come in. Like, let me just hear what's going on. And he had already made the decision to drop out because he said just financially he couldn't carry that financial burden. And here was one of these very bright young people who was a top performer and was going to have to stop. And so I went to Dr. Yelton, and we just kind of said, what can we do? And mm-hmm. we started blowing up the phone, just anybody we could who would take our call and say, and actually started walking across campus, who can we get in front of that can we can plead the case of this one student? And some people came together generously and found the money that was needed to keep the student in school for one more semester. So he came back, he finished out the semester, did well, left him with his senior year. Well, when he left Gardner-Webb, he went off on a major scholarship to a top-ranked, a nationally top-ranked law school. Mm-hmm. And he is now actually, as far as I know, he's completing, I spoke to him recently, he's completing law school. And he's going to do this actually really interesting work and that's making an impact on the lives of young people. He's very passionate about making an impact through the law on children who are missed out by the system. Mm. And so here's this person who's going to make this tremendous impact, and it really all boils down to these men had built a legacy where you're supposed to care about the students, and that's and be proactive in that agenda, and we were able to live that out. So it's a really remarkable place where one student is worthy of stopping multiple professors and multiple staff members' days and weeks to fix a problem because we need to make sure the student sees it out.
Right.
And so one more piece of the legacy these scholars built was you can be a scholar and you can be a great teacher, but it doesn't mean anything if you're not a great mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so we try to live that out on a daily basis.
Right. And I can definitely say from the standpoint of a staffer here at Gardner-Webb who has spoken to these students directly, the Stephanie McCullops, the Chris Begules, the Elizabeth Moore, Sarah Lynch, Madison Cates, I mean, on and on they go. That is the number one thing that they say, is my professors care about me. They know me and they care about me. And it almost gives me chills just to consider what that really means, because like you said, it's the mentorship piece that is so, that's the stuff that they're taking with them. I mean, of course, the knowledge. One of the things, Dr. Moore, that I think you shared in an interview not too long ago was something about that if teaching is just about the lecture, that we can easily replicate that online and in the online platform. How has the lecture changed over the years? I mean, yes, there's going to be times when you guys are delivering the information to the students in that traditional format, but what are some other learning styles that you guys have found to be extremely effective? And I'll start with you because I know you've worked with a lot of these recent mm-hmm. research scholars. You've put them in archives and they've had to kind of dig themselves. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to turn that question to you as well.
Well, I just think we're past the point where a quality college education can be about what happens for 3 hours a week spread across three lectures. That there's an element of that that has to remain. But if you're going to be a college committed to the well-being of each individual student, then it has to move outside of the classroom. It has to move into the office for mentoring. It has to move into that individual, what do you want to do with your life? And then you kind of build the system backwards from where they want to go in life to what they should do in order to get there. So in the case of a student who, for instance, was very interested in Native American law and wanted to do the kind of legal aspects of Native American. So we built multiple research programs into this student's coursework that would focus on Native American issues. We had another student, we mentioned Sarah, who was very interested in becoming a museum professional. So how do we ask you in each course to think through the public-facing side of what it means to think about and have a public memory of this history that you're studying. And so when you can kind of tailor every, not just in the class, but even outside of the class, what they're going through to be focused and driving towards an ultimate goal, they become a 22-year-old with more than a college degree. They become a professional in their field. And one of the ways we do that is certainly through good lectures and good content, challenging content, but also really, at the end of the day, there's only so much I can give a student. A student has to go out there and earn it by digging through archives, by reading far more voluminously than they thought they could, by pushing themselves to the edge of what they thought they could accomplish, and then finding out they've got more. And so we do that by putting them in the archives. We do that by original research. I was told recently by some faculty colleagues at another university that what we're asking of our undergraduates comes very close to what they ask of their master's degree students. Mm-hmm. And I took that as a compliment. That's maybe, and maybe we're not asking enough of master's students, because I can get a 21 or 22 year old there. So they're doing a lot of really interesting stuff. Most of our students are publishing their material. They're presenting their material nationwide. They're traveling mm-hmm. the country with their research proposals and research mm-hmm. projects.
Getting awards for those things.
Getting awards, getting national mm-hmm. awards. And I mean mm-hmm. like really significant national awards.
Yeah.
So it's part of that process of taking each individual student's needs and desires and goals, and then building backwards on that. How do we get you there?
Right, exactly. And I know, Dr. Vanderberg, you mentioned about, you know, we're not just slouches, just, you know, kicking back. We're actually doing our own research, and you did some pretty significant research on Cannon Mills and published a book recently. And Dr. Moore, you've done your own on the Covenanters, and see, I even remember that.
That's
Can you believe
right.
it?
It's impressive.
I know.
Now there's three of us in
the
North Carolina
Irish
who remember the Covenanters.
I know, exactly. Yeah. But how do you take, I mean, it's important, I would imagine, to be continuing to research and that sort of thing, because then you're right there in the trenches with the students and doing
right.
the very things that you're asking them to do.
Right. Well, I think that's important. Because you can use those research experiences in what you learn and bring it in the classroom. So when I talk about industrialization in the South after the Civil War, I can use Kannapolis as an example of that, because that's what I have studied, Cannon Mills and Kannapolis. And I can also say things like this morning in one of my classes, we're talking about how to write a book review. Mm-hmm. So I have put a guide up on the board that I had sent them via email attachment. And we went over all this, and the students had questions like, how do you identify the thesis? Where's the thesis going to be? And I can say things like, well, in my book, when mm-hmm. I designed my, yeah. wrote my book, when I had people critiquing it, giving me, you know, give me good suggestions about it, you know, it should be in the preface or an introduction, and it should be fairly clear and straightforward. And so I can use the experience I've had from writing and publishing and apply that directly to class
right.
for the students. One other thing I think we do pretty well is at times we use experiential learning. We learning outside the classroom and talking then again about Kannapolis and Cannon Mills. I teach a North Carolina history class, and this last time I had them read my book and take home exam on it and graded that. And it covered all sorts of topics from paternalism to branding and marketing products. Mm-hmm. That's what Cannon Mills did early mm-hmm. on. We actually went to Kannapolis, and even though mill number one and the headquarters has been razed to the ground, and now it's a biotech research center, we looked at how has Kannapolis changed. We actually went there. We actually took a tour of the biotech research center mm-hmm. and UNC's nutritional center there. We actually met with the head chef of Dole Foods, mm. who's doing nutritional research in cooking. And so we actually took that outside the classroom and reading a book about how did the textile mills rise and how did they fall. And we went and looked at how Kannapolis is kind of rising out of those ashes, mm-hmm. redesigning itself as a biotech research center. And I think that trip, at least what I heard from students, really kind of was a good ending point for the book, because it showed how Kannapolis is changing and becoming something new and different.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And connects so many things when you're hands-on. It's just an incredible mm-hmm. Cementer, I think, of the information that you've been exposed to.
Well, I would just kind of, to round this back to the BEH scholarship, which we are really thankful that people have been stepping up to the plate and donating. You know, ultimately, what does this scholarship do? It's going to go to help a student in the humanities and in the Department of Social Sciences mm-hmm. who has a need and is a student that the faculty believe not only has the need but has the potential to capitalize on being on that aid. And we see these students all the time. Some of our best performing students who've gone on to these remarkable careers after graduation, unbeknownst to a lot of people, struggled to make ends meet every day of those 4 years. And I have seen students who, to the earlier example, thought they couldn't afford to stay in. I've seen students who go from their national award-winning tours that they've been given because of the research they did and their everyday jobs so that they can make sure they have money to pay for what they need. I've seen students who've honestly probably would have been another college, but they couldn't afford to be at those colleges, and they found it at Gardner-Webb, a place they could get a high-quality education, and they could just about afford it, but they're still stretching. And this gives us the chance to turn to those students and say, in the legacy of these three amazing professors who created the department that's helping you succeed, mm-hmm. we want to help you get there and mm-hmm. help you get through. And so for everyone who's willing to give, it's going to make a difference. It's going to keep the legacy of the department from decades before going for decades to come. So we're really appreciative that people are stepping up and hope Absolutely. More will continue to do that.
Absolutely. Gentlemen, thank you so much for taking the time today to just kind of talk a little bit about the history of the Social Sciences Department, but also the future. And I think that the future is in tremendous hands. You folks are some of our best and brightest. We are always excited to hear about the things that your students are accomplishing and achieving, and we look forward to many, many, many more success stories. So thank you for your service here, and thank you for being here with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For WGWG.org, I'm Nikki Bliss Carroll.